show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 364. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And on this week's show, one of my favorite things, like literally, what else would we be talking about but punk rock? I've got Jeremiah Ludeman, guitarist for the Frickashinas and also the mastermind behind the 420 Punk Fest Denver. Now, Jay and I are like kindred spirits in a lot of ways. We're both girl dads. Our girls are like the same age. We both like the same music. We're both entrepreneurs. And anytime I get together with him, or with Justin, or with Sam, or with Brett, the vibe is just so easygoing. Like, immediately, I get together with these dudes and I go, man, it's like we've been friends for fucking years. And I love that. Like, what a great feeling. Like, that, just that nice, warm soap and water feeling where you go, all right, yep. This is going to be easy peasy. And here's the cool thing, at least as it pertains to the vibe in this house. I think my girls pick up on that. Because I'll play the Frickashinas for them. And the Frickashinas, they go hard, dude. Like, they go real hard. They go as hard as anyone. But because I'm listening to this all the time and I'm having such a good time and they write such good hooks and just such great tunes, then my kids find an entry point in here and they go, yep, Dad, can we listen to the Frickashinas? Man, this is my 7 and my 9-year-old. That is awesome. And so it's high time I had Jeremiah on the show, so here he is. So not only do we talk about all things Frickashinas, including that goofy name, but we talk about this upcoming 420 Punk Fest, which, by the way, go down to the episode description here in the show notes, and you'll find a link to get tickets to the 420 Punk Fest. And look at that lineup. If you like punk rock, and if you're here in Denver or anywhere kind of within a few hours of Denver, this is going to be a killer, killer show. I can personally vouch for many of these bands. I love them all. I love Jeremiah's taste, so he has curated this list brilliantly. So go down to the show notes, get yourself a ticket, and let's hang out, and I will see you there. And hey, one quick plug for me. If you're down there in the show notes anyway, just go to my show page, leave a rating, leave a review, whatever platform you're on, whether it's iTunes, whether it's Spotify, whether it's iHeart, whatever it is. Give me a like, give me a rating, give me a review. All those things tend to just help the podcast on whatever platform you're on. So I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for letting me be a part of your life. Now, since we do go long on this show, because Jeremiah and I could probably just sit down and talk for a month of Sundays, let's get to it. Enough foreplay, let's get to the main event. Episode 364 of the John of All Trades podcast features Jeremiah Ludeman, guitarist for the Frickashinas, mastermind behind the 420 Punk Fest, and his episode starts right now. So they took your mic away. How bad is your voice?
Oh, terrible. Terrible, yeah. Let's just dive right in there.
Yeah, perfect.
Since I actually have a mic.
So not even for gang vocals?
I stand at the back.
Okay.
For gang vocals.
All right. Like,
I can't even yell in key.
Oh, Jesus,
you know,
Christ,
when,
really?
Like, even my kids will tell me, like, oh, Daddy, nah. And we're singing in the car. Like, you know, like, I'm not even allowed to sing along with him in the car.
Dad, you're ruining it.
Yeah.
That's
like when
too
your 4-year old, you know, she's 7 now, but when your 4-year old is telling you, like, no, oh, Daddy, I know this one. You
know? I got this one.
You know, I was like, okay. So, yeah.
Why don't you just play some air guitar for us?
Yeah, and that doesn't go as well when you're driving. You know?
Well, come on, dude. You're a rock star. You'll figure it out, right?
Like, you can air drum on the steering wheel.
Oh, there you go.
I can't keep a beat worth of shit either. You know?
So what are we doing here, man? Like, tell me.
I play guitar.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Yeah, you know? I gotcha. So this is Jeremiah Ludeman, the guitarist for the Frickashinas and the mastermind behind the 420 Punk Fest, which I am desperately looking forward to because the lineup that you guys have put together is phenomenal.
I don't even know how it happened.
What do you mean?
So my very good friend, Jamin Marshall from Larry and His Flask.
Yep.
He and I worked together a lot. We were sitting around.
Doing what? Because, I mean, everyone has to assume that unless you're a signed band, even if you're a signed band, because, like, I would hear stories about fucking Joey Cape painting houses in the summer sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, and that's Lagwagon.
Right.
You got to figure everyone has a day job. So, like, what are you spending your time doing?
So, I own a company called Primary Focus Media.
Mm-hmm.
We're a live event production company.
Nice.
We do association meetings, awards galas, pharmaceutical meetings, live streaming, little bit of entertainment, but mostly boring corporate AV stuff.
Oh, that's like me, because I have this show, then I do a bunch of stuff for clients that people who listen to this show probably don't listen to.
Yeah.
So I totally get it. Yeah, no, you and I are simpatico that way.
When I tell people what I do, I usually, and they look at me and go, wait, I don't know what that means. And I usually tell them, like, you know when you go to a concert and they got screens and lights and sound and all the cameras and all that? I own all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't use it for concerts.
Okay, perfect.
So, but it's basically the same thing. We were working in the shop, prepping some stuff, and had this idea that there's tons of festivals in Denver on 420. There's a bunch of hip hop. There's a bunch of jam band. There's everything you could possibly think of.
Sure.
But there's nothing related to punk rock for 420 specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, well, punkers like to smoke pot.
Yeah.
You know? So why can't we have a festival? And it was kind of a joke, you know, like it wasn't even supposed to be a thing. And
it was just like garage talk, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we texted a couple of our friends and said, hey, would you guys be down to play a show on the 19th and 20th? Mm-hmm. We called a 420 Punk Fest. And then all of them said yes. And so then we were like, oh, crap. So now we actually went from like an idea of like four or five bands to like 15 bands. And then we were like, okay, well, if we're going to have that many bands and call it a festival, like you have to have a headliner or two. Like, you got to have somebody bigger than just the local bands.
Right.
So then we reached out to some of our friends that could potentially do that. And that's a whole nother story that I don't want to get into on this, of bands that said yes, but then decided they couldn't for X, Y, and Z. So then we were like, oh, crap. So now we thought we had these big headlining bands, and now we don't. Yeah. So then we started just reaching out to, like, what bands do you like? So Mercy Music, who's headlining Friday night, I've been a huge fan of that band for a couple of years now. But the record they put out last year is, in my opinion, a masterpiece, an absolute masterpiece. So I just emailed them.
Yeah.
I'm friends with them on Facebook. I've never met them.
Okay.
Never talked to them in my life. They have no idea who I am. They don't know my band. I just sent a message to their bass player and said, hey, dude, you guys want to come to Denver? And he said, call our manager. And so I did. Then now they're in, you know.
Dude, here's the thing I love about the Frigashina so much is you guys curate, like your taste is very similar to mine, right? Where if you have support acts when you're headlining, I'm always like, I'm probably going to enjoy this because like that's how I found fucking System Restore out of Casper.
Dope. Love those guys.
Those guys are awesome. You were playing with Strike 12 and I listened to them. I go, dude, those guys are killer. And then, like, I saw you at Moe's one time, and you had Dial Drive from Florida.
Yeah.
And I go, these guys, I bought a shirt of theirs, too. Yeah. And, like, so I walk around, no one knows what the fuck I'm doing. But I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I'm giving someone something to think about. So, like, your sensibility is always just right there for me, which I really like, which is one of the reasons I'm looking forward to this fest so much.
When we try to surround ourselves with bands that, like, I don't care how popular your band is.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you got to not be a dick.
Yeah.
Step one.
Like, yeah, okay.
I don't care how good or popular a band is. If you're an asshole, we're out. We're not doing that.
Spoken like a true contractor, right? Because I know that too. I end up teaming up with other people who are like independent contractors, like we both are. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't want to work with that guy because it's too it's just too exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, I have no room in my life for pricks anymore. So, like, that's what you're describing.
Yeah. If you're not in it for the same reason, like all the bands you just named off, I'm personally friends with outside of band life.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, like
you like them as people.
Yeah, like the whole band of Strike 12 have been very close friends of mine for years.
Nice.
You know, like over a decade. No Bueno used to play with them, and Bold Type used to play with them. So I've toured with those bands and played with that band many, many, many times.
You were in Bold Type?
I played guitar on tour in Bold Type.
Okay.
So to be very clear there.
Sure,
that,
yeah.
You know, I was never in Bold Type, okay. But I played
you
guitar.
You were touring guitarist for him. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And we played a bunch of shows with Strike 12.
Sure.
When we played. So those guys have been friends forever. I text Jake from Dial Drive probably once a week.
Nice.
You know, like we're just kind of bathtub buddies. Like, what you doing? You know?
Hey, Quagmire.
Yeah, you know. So we try to surround ourselves with bands that are legitimately good, like, I listen to all these bands. I wear their merch. I wear their shirts. They're on my playlists, like, and they're my friends.
Yeah.
So we try to surround ourselves with bands that are talented, that are very good people, that have the same vision and goals as we do.
Mm-hmm.
And the bands you listed are all prime examples of that. And that's literally the 420 list.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't now every single band on there is a friend of ours.
Sure. Well, I mean, like right in a row on the Saturday show, you've got, you know, the Bastard Sons headlining, who are just exceptional. And then it's you guys, No Bueno, All Waffle. And like those are probably top three Denver bands for me.
That's awesome.
Just I like like seeing them all right in a row. I mean, it's like nothing but money shots, right?
Yeah.
I go, tight. This, and so I, when I saw that lineup, I go, yes, here we go.
And the rest of the bands are all awesome to be involved as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's Saturday
night. I expect nothing
night,
less.
I mean, obviously, so I'm in the Frickishinas.
Mm-hmm.
I also curated the lineup for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I very selfishly stacked that Saturday night, you know, because, you know, the Bastards are a prime example too, because I met them through No Bueno.
Okay.
And we were on a compilation with them in 2010 or something.
Jesus.
Like we're going way back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've played with them with No Bueno. I've played with them through the Frickishinas. We've both of those bands, both of my local bands have become good friends with the Bastard Sons.
Yeah.
In fact, No Bueno's playing a bunch of shows with them, not a bunch, but a couple, the weekend before.
Oh, yeah, the Springs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just such a great group of guys, and we have so much fun every time we hang out that Saturday night, if you have All Waffle Trick hanging out, the No Bueno, the Frickishinas, and the Bastard Sons, I don't care if nobody else shows up. We are going to have more fun.
Well, fuck, I'll be there.
Anybody? So
I already bought my ticket.
We'll have just like, John in the front row. You know,
yeah.
Just you.
I'll go
and
over
us.
To the snack machine, like I threatened to do when you were playing at East Fax when it was raining. That one show. What the hell was that show? You were playing with All Waffle Trick. That was a good show too. Do you remember that? We were playing East Fax and it was raining like cats and dogs that night. It was supposed to be outside, but it ended up being inside.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was like last.
Oh, because and they have the little snack machine.
Yeah, right the vending there. Machine there, and so like in all the shots, you see the snack machine. It's all lit up. It makes it look cool. But yeah, you're like, dude, come up and buy a bag of chips. And I probably forgot, but yeah, that was a really really fun show. I want to get your take on something, and you don't have to name names here, but I was talking with probably some scenester about how great I think the punk scene is in Denver right now. And you can go catch a really great show almost any night of the week. And that's kind of what I was alluding to, because I have a friend who lived in a different part of the country, and he goes, God, dude, like I'm jealous of what you can go see in Denver pretty much any time. And so I was kind of talking about how great the scene was. He goes, yeah, I don't know. There's still like politics, though, and there's still drama. And I'm like, okay, you are way too fucking close to it. I'm lucky because I don't actually give a shit, right? I'm far enough removed to where all of that drama just sort of misses me. I just like good shows. You're in the scene. What's your appraisal of sort of my take on it and this take that I heard?
All right. This is a good topic for me.
Okay.
Because I moved here in 2003, I think, and immediately hit the punk scene.
Mm-hmm.
And was Johnny on the spot. I went to shows every single night, every single venue. I've played with and or in or around every band in town. And now I'm kind of an elder statesman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've met a handful of kids. I call them kids. They're 30, right. You know, that have been in bands for years that are probably more popular than my band, that have caught me in hallways at bars or at practice spaces and went, dude, you're in that guy from that band. Like I used to come see you at the Gothic when I was a teenager.
Right.
You know, and it's like, well, okay, that's weird. Am I that old? But yeah, I am, you know?
Yeah.
So something that we play with a lot of bands from all over the country. Mm-hmm. We've toured a lot. I've toured a lot. I've met a lot of cool people that I'm still friends with. And every single band will tell you coming to Denver is a special town. We have a lot of venues. We have a lot of bands. In my opinion, there's always going to be competition and whatever, but I've never been that guy.
Yeah.
Like high tides rises all ships, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've always said a scene blows up. One band doesn't just blow up on their own out of a town somewhere that nobody's ever heard of.
No.
5 or 6 or 8 or 10 bands come up and 1 or 2 skyrocket above the rest, right? The 80s hair metal and the Seattle scene and
yeah.
New York hardcore. Like there's 100 bands that brought everybody up and then
sure.
2 or 3 blew the fuck up, right?
Right. Yeah. You could say that about almost any city.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's yeah. how Denver, I've always viewed Denver as that. Like we're all going to come up together. But when we go on the road, we'll play with bands that I think are the most popular band in that town.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come to Denver, they'll bring out 50, 80 people in Denver. And then we go to their hometown and they bring out five or eight.
Jesus Christ, you know? Really?
Well, that's, I mean, obviously.
Yeah. You're exaggerating slightly. But
the idea being like in their hometowns, they don't have nearly as many people. And they'll tell us what we have in Denver is special because the bands in this town support each other.
Okay.
And so when you go to a show, if you go to a show, a Frickishina show, and you look out in the audience, let's just say there's 50 people there, 20 of them play in other bands.
Right.
Right. Whether they're there because they're supporting their friend Jay or Justin or Brett or Sam, or they're there because they want to network for their next show, or they want to support the scene, they're there. They paid $5, $10, $20, whatever it was, to get through the door to come hang out and support you. And they're going to stand in the front row and they're going to sing along to your songs.
Yeah.
Because we do that to them. Most cities don't do that. LA doesn't do that. Florida doesn't do that.
Interesting.
They don't have that camaraderie that our scene does.
What do you attribute that to? What makes Denver special and unique in that way?
God, I wish I had an answer for that, you know?
Because I've been thinking about this too. This is kind of, I don't know exactly what it is, but I think one of my other loves is professional wrestling. And it's really, really hard to be a professional wrestler here in Denver because there's simply not enough population. There's not enough population centers, right? You could do a show in Denver, then maybe the Springs, and then, fuck, man, like, it's a long way to New Mexico, and that's not all that populated. It's 8 hours to Salt Lake. It's 8 hours to Kansas City. Go up to Cheyenne, maybe. Go up to Casper, maybe, right? It's still a fucking lot of windshield time. So you compare that against a place like L.A. or the East Coast, where on the East Coast, you know, there's Boston, New York, Philly, D.C., and they're all, like, within 2 hours of each other. So Denver, it's almost like if you want it, and we're a major city, if you want to have the scene that you want, you have to build it yourself. And I feel like that's what makes this such an interesting punk town.
I think that you kind of arbitrarily hit the nail on the head there because Denver's a required stop
on yes.
every tour.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you want to go West Coast across the whole country, where else are you going to go? You're going to choose Cheyenne over Denver? No, you're not going to.
Probably not.
You're not doing that. So when a band does come to Denver, everybody goes to it because they have to, you know. That's the only big thing going on. And that band isn't coming back here for a while, but you know they're coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even on the same tour. You know what I mean? Like they'll hit Denver on the way out, and then a month and a half later, they hit the Springs on the way back.
Well, dude, you mentioned coming here in 2003. During that time, from like 2001 to like 2004, I feel like I saw Yellow Card fucking 15 times, right? Yellow Card was here constantly.
Yeah.
I've seen the Mad Caddies probably 20 times in my life, right? Like, because they all love it here. And like when I interview them, I'll interview Jose from Make War or, you know, Vinny from Less Than Jake or Krista Makes from Less Than Jake. And they're all like, oh God, Denver is like usually one of our hottest towns.
And every band says that.
Yeah. But and then they all have trouble with the altitude.
Yeah.
Which is always funny.
That's whenever I can steal Justin's mic for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, like if he steps away for a second, sure. I'll jump in there to talk some shit. And I've stolen that joke, but now that I'm getting older, it's kind of true, man. Like if I'm jumping around on stage for 45 minutes, I'm getting winded, you know.
Yeah. You got to hit the Peloton, man.
I probably should.
Yeah, get the cardio up. So I want to ask you about something because we'll be hanging out at a show, like, before you guys go on or whatever. We're just bullshitting. We're just talking. And any kind of mention of, like, some sort of scene drama or something comes up, you guys seem to just slough it off. You seem to just be above it and not really concern yourself with getting down in the muck about any of it. How did you come to do that? Because I understand how that can be really, really distracting for a band.
I'm the worst person to ask that because I have the biggest mouth and almost no filter.
Okay.
Whatsoever. I have built a negative reputation of saying what I want, when I want, how I want, as loudly as I possibly can. There's a handful of people in this town that will tell you that Jay's an asshole.
They don't fucking like you.
Yeah.
Huh.
And I'm fully aware of it.
Yeah.
I used to wear it as a badge of honor almost. Mm-hmm. I don't anymore. I'm fully aware that maybe sometimes I just need to shut my mouth. That my opinion, even though I am certain it's right, they might not.
And also, like, what do you gain from that? I've learned that, too. As I get older, I've realized sometimes just best to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And largely, I got to give credit to my band. They have made a point to calm me down.
Okay, good.
And to learn to not send that text right away. Don't send that email right away. Rephrase it. You could send it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you can respond to whatever the thing is.
Sure.
But wait till tomorrow.
Let it marinate for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. See,
maybe
yeah.
take the F word out of it.
Right. See how it looks in the light of day.
Yeah.
And like I've learned to do that too. There was one time Kristen, my wife, used to be a residential realtor, and she was dealing with some very, very high maintenance clients. And she goes, "What should I do here? Like, they keep fucking me up." I go, "Don't do anything. Just nothing. Just sit still for a minute, okay? Give it like 20 minutes and this might resolve itself." Sure enough, they texted her like 15 minutes later. It's like, "No, we're good now." And I go, "See, you solved it." Like, no need to weigh in here unnecessarily. So yeah. I like that piece of advice.
And I it took a long time to learn that. I think being a dad helped me with that a lot too.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, exercising some patience with a toddler that's not going to listen to you anyway.
Oh, they're so unreasonable.
So why would you engage with somebody that's acting like a toddler? You're not going to win. Even though you're right, even though you're going to come out on top of this and you know it, you're not going to win this argument right now. So just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Let them throw their fit. And then just go over here and do what you're going to do.
Yeah, just let it pass through you. Be a part of your own agenda.
Yeah. And I think with being in a band, there's a lot of like sub-scenes in every big scene in every city.
Right.
You know, there's these six or eight bands that all play together and, mm-hmm. and these five or six over here. And there's four bands over here that are made up of all the same six people. They just switch instruments and have a different band name, but they all play the same songs basically. You know, and that's every city has that.
Yeah.
And so we've built our reputation, I think, personally, mm-hmm. of we don't want to be just with those bands or that band or play only at that bar or that club or those venues.
Yeah.
We want to play with everybody and we want to hang out with everybody. And so we've kind of taken the attitude of build your own scene, you know,
I like
within
that.
The scene.
Well, dude, that's very punk rock, right? That's just very DIY.
I
don't think I've ever named a band that you have had an unkind word about. Right. Because I went and saw No Bueno not that long ago and they had this band, the Cadillacs, opening for them. And I'd never heard of the Cadillacs, didn't know anything about them. And they played like this will stick with me for a long time. They played an awesome cover of Yakety Yak.
Yeah.
Like that old fucking song that you may remember from Twins or The Great Outdoors. But I heard it and I go, that is such a great punk cover. It would be even better if they had a horn section. Right. Because like you can wail away on that sax. But like, I mean, they were shredding. And you go, yeah, I love those guys. Those guys are great. And I'm like, is there one you don't know?
No. I mean, that's the thing. I've been in this scene for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I was a scene kid. Like, I wore it proudly.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I try to be the guy that I want to know the guitar player of that band and the drummer of that band. Whether I'm going to go see that band all the time, I want to know the people that are making the music, that are creating the art.
Yeah.
And I want to create a personal relationship with them because I'm a creative person.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what makes you tick as a human, not just as a guitar player, not just as a band guy, you know, like what makes you the human that creates this stuff, you know? And so that's why I talk to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. That's why I have this fucking show. And I mean, you guys have told me before, like, thanks for being such a champion of the scene and the little guy and all that. And I'm like, well, anyone who dares to create anything is already taking a huge risk. The fact that your band exists in the first place and you guys are out there and you found success and you put out this awesome vinyl that my kids love to listen to, that's a victory in itself. We should celebrate that, right? Anyone who's fucking creating anything. And like, that's the other thing I've come to realize. I liked what you said about not being cutthroat about it, because being cutthroat gets you nowhere. Like, it's a zero-sum game, and that's a shitty way to view the world. There is so much out there that we can all get a little piece of it, you know? And, like, you work hard, you get a bigger piece, you know? It's fine, but you don't have to slit any throats on the way to doing that. People ask me that about podcasting. I'm like, I really don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna do what I do because I love to do it, and I can't not do it. That's one of the biggest pieces of advice. We talked about this. Kyle Kinane said, you have to be prepared to do what you love for free forever if you're going to have any success with it. And that's kind of what you're describing.
Well, I still subscribe to that I'm very lucky. I've played in more bands than I can count. I've been a part of writing more songs than I can count in my life.
Yeah.
And this is the first band that I've ever been in that you take away all the shows, you take away all of the cool stuff that we get to do. The four of us are still going to show up at our studio and we're going to drink beers and we're going to write songs together and we're going to go record them for ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're going to still have more fun than any band in the room. Like when the four of us are together,
mm-hmm.
even if we're not playing a show, like you can see it on stage.
Oh yeah.
That we're friends.
Hey, you guys are pals.
And you can see it off stage that the four of us are together all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And at any given second you look over, one of us is laughing with tears coming out of our eyes.
Right.
You know, cause that's just how we interact. And half the time people around us are looking at us like, you guys are idiots. Like that was an inside joke that literally nobody else is going to get. And we're like snotting up cause we're laughing so hard.
Yeah. You know? And I've definitely done that with you guys too.
Yeah.
There was one time we were watching, I was standing with Justin at East Facts. I think it was that show you guys headlined, that indoor one where it was raining. And I was standing in the back with Justin as I'm listening to Dryer Fire go on and on about Adams County. And like they have one song in particular that talks very specifically about the geography of Adams County. And they're talking about the wildlife refuge and all that. And I'm telling Justin about how I did this campaign to permit a new substation up there, an electrical substation. And I had to go and knock on all these business doors and get all these signatures. And like, I had to draft all these individual copies of this letter. I'm telling him this story for 5 fucking minutes. And I tell him, I'm like, bro, when I came to your show, I wanted to get away. I had no idea I was going to have to think about some fucking project I did 5 years ago in this level of detail. And it destroyed him because I gave him all that detail and he was right there with me.
Yeah.
I may or may not have been wildly stoned. But
that also sounds like you're fit in with our band.
Yeah. So that kind of thing, I've always hit it off with you guys. It makes it very easy. I remember, and I talked about this. I didn't talk about this with Justin when he was on the show. But when I hired you guys to write Happy Friday, which made it onto your album, which made me thrilled, I sent Justin, what, like 4 sentences?
Yeah.
And a link to a Touche Amore song. Not even one of your fucking songs, but just a song that I'm like, here's kind of, this feels similar to your band. Here's the vibe we're going for. And he goes, got it. And then you guys turn it around. I go, that's exactly what I heard in my head.
I love the story of that song because what you hear is the first version of that song. Like every part of it was like, all right, we're just going to do this now. And then we're going to come back to it and we're going to make it better. And then it just stayed. Like, we just nailed it on the first try.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember sending it to you and you were like, nope, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, that's just a demo. Like,
well, and it was the shitty like iPhone recording because I asked Justin for that too. Yeah. And I listened to that. I go, and that's always a gamble with clients, dude. Like, have you ever sent like a rough something to a client where, and they go, this isn't at all. And you go, well, it's got to be produced. But like, the skeleton is here, right? Yeah. You have to be able to see the framing of the house before we, you know, start putting up fucking bricks.
Right.
Right. And so I go, nope, he got it. That's exactly what I wanted.
The cell phone recording is such a great example of, I used to, like, we would record demo ideas and I would go home and show my wife, like, we wrote this new song and like, this is the best song we've ever written. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And I'd play it for her and she'd be like, well, okay. Like,
yeah.
I can't even hear anything. That just sounds like noise.
Yeah.
You know, or I'd be on the road traveling for work and play a demo for somebody in a hotel room, you know, and they're like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't sound like your singer knows how to sing. You know, it's like, hold on. Like, that's not true at all. Like, he's the best singer I know. Because people don't, they can't see the vision through the,
right.
You know, the forest through the trees type of thing. That we hear where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
We know, like, that whole entire demo, we're only going to take away that 13-second part in the middle is what we're building on.
Right.
You know, but we needed the whole thing to get to that, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and I remember, like, my one piece of feedback was, I'm like, put the stick clicks back in the beginning. Like, that's all I want. Like, you had them, and then you took them out. No, put them back in. That's part of what I wanted.
Yeah.
Like, just getting, like, counted in.
Because that's the signature part, especially for an introductory song.
Right.
Like, you need that thing that gets your attention immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wait for the best part to be 12 seconds in.
Right.
It's got to be right now, because 12 seconds in, we're already starting the show.
Yeah, because, I mean, that song's, what, like a minute 15?
Yeah.
Minute and a half, something like that? And that's, like, that's exactly what I asked for, too. And so you got there. You told me, a funny story about like the guitar in the I think it's in the bridge section, right? It was just something you noodled, and your producer's like, no, that's it, that's perfect. You go, what the fuck? No, I was just, and
that's exactly
stayed.
What it was. Like, it was literally like, that's what I meant. Like, we're just like, that's just gonna sit here, and tomorrow we're gonna come back and do it for real.
Yeah,
you know, and then that's what stayed. Yeah. You know, like everything is the first try, is the first version. Like, nobody went back and redid everything. Like, that's like the greatest song. You always hear those stories. Like, I know you're a fan of Krista Makes a Podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? I'm a huge fan.
Yeah,
of
we're both
show.
In that same Facebook group.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest themes of that show is the record was done, and then they were like, the singer went outside to smoke a cigarette and came back in and was like, hold on, I got one more idea.
Yeah.
You know, and then they wrote this other song instantly. Like, it just happened on the spot with no preparation whatsoever, and that was the biggest hit.
Yeah, and then fucking Ocean Avenue was born.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, or like Fat Lip by Sum 41 or some shit. And you go, that was like the last one. Yeah. Like, you guys had everything else, but this one is just sort of like, nah, one more. Let's try that.
And it was just an idea that they threw together, you know?
Yeah.
But it's that's the antithesis of art, that when you, if you overthink it.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets watered down. It comes the same version of something you already did because you go, oh, well, this worked before. Let's put that thing in here too.
Right. Yeah, you're playing with your food too much.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, like, is what that comes down to. But I remember Justin also telling me a story about that. And by the way, I've, outside of Kevin and Art, who I used to co-host Happy Friday with, no one has listened to that song more than I have.
Yeah,
right? Sure. So we would listen to it every single, like, before we would record. We would just throw it on to get ourselves in the right frame of mind. And then, you know, as you're producing it, you hear the song a couple of times because you have to get all the timing right and all that. So we would hear it probably like at least four times each recording day. And so it was just a shitload. And once I left that show, I kind of heard it again with fresh ears. And I thought about, there was a review of you guys. I can't remember who wrote it, but they were sort of reviewing Thanks for the Invite. It mentioned Happy Friday. And then just in parentheses, it said, the song is hilarious. And so I thought about it outside of the, like, if you didn't know our show existed, if you never listened to that show and that just comes on, I heard it almost like out of context and I go, dude, this song is fucking hilarious.
It's a party song, like, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's, so here's a dilemma of that song. Are we allowed to play it on other days than Friday?
Oh, dude, you got to play it on, especially if it's not Saturday. Like, if it's Wednesday or some shit, if you're playing like a Tuesday show, play that song because that'll be hilarious. Everyone's like,
so that's
not Friday.
I think that's the good advice. Like, we've kind of made it a Friday only song.
Sure.
You know, but we definitely can't play it on Saturday. Right?
No, that just feels off.
Yeah. But I love your idea of, like, on Wednesday, we need to look forward to Happy Friday, you know?
Yeah,
we're almost there.
And just shouting out, it's Friday,
yeah.
Like on like a fucking Tuesday. Everyone's like, oh, okay, yeah, why not? Make your own Friday.
Yeah, make your own Friday. Right. It's Friday somewhere.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Probably not. Maybe on like Jupiter.
Yeah, like, you know. Man, it's still Monday, bro. Yeah.
But it's funny. One thing we text, I don't know, semi-regularly, yeah. I would say, because our girls are about the same age. You're... How old are yours?
7 and 10.
Okay, mine are 7 and 9.
Yep.
So the 7-year-old turns 8 in July. The 9-year-old is in October. So, but they're like right there. My kids fucking love your band.
They
go apeshit for it. And like they will request it. And like if I'm in the house and I just go, I just want to ask, the kids will be like, hey, what you doing? From I Like Your Band Better. The flip side of that is, you told me your kids don't give a shit.
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, like, it's kind of deflates your ego a little bit, but I think that
right.
I think dads and band guys need that.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Both sides of my life are getting it in one shot, you know. That dads aren't, you're never going to be cool. Right?
No, not like, even Dave Grohl is cool to his kids.
Right. You know, like yeah. you'll be cooler than the other dad maybe. But you're never gonna be cool, and that's okay. Like you're not supposed to be.
Well, no, because in your house you got to be Dr. No.
Yeah.
Right. Because my kids are always making these inane requests, and I don't know about your kids, but mine need a snack like every 25 fucking minutes.
Yeah.
And you're going, Jesus Christ! Like, no, we're not opening up the marshmallow fluff. Okay.
We didn't even make it last night. We ate dinner and then went to go to the car wash.
Yeah.
We didn't even make it to the car wash before my 7-year-old's in the back seat going, "Daddy, I'm hungry." Like, just because we drove past King Supers, you know?
Yeah. Your Pavlovian response is overstimulated here.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. So, no, I get that, too, because, like, with podcasting, unless I have, like, a guest that they actually recognize, because they're going to be thrilled with this one, by the way. But awesome. I'll be like, you know, this person is, you know, fairly, you know, they have a lot of notoriety and whatever, and they go, uh-huh, yep. And then just nothing, right? Yeah. Just bounces right off them. And so the fact that I even have, like, a microphone and equipment and stuff, that it's sort of, when you're a kid, you think your life is everyone's life.
Yeah.
Right? Because my dad used to travel all the time for business. And so I went to Disneyland like 5 times before I was fucking 10, right? Because he was always in California and we would fly like companion fares and like we'd basically go for free.
Right.
And so we were able to do that. When kids would tell me like, yeah, I've never been to Disneyland. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you went all the time.
You know,
it's
so
just totally normal.
I'm sure my kids are like, who does your dad interview for a living?
Right, right. And that's like my kids have, one of the first shows that they, so my girls get to be our merch girls for us on when we play bigger shows.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, good luck to you walking by two cute little blonde girls.
Yes. Saying no to
leather
them.
Jackets and Doc Martens, and you're not going to buy a t-shirt from them?
Yeah.
Good luck, you know? So we played a show at the Marquee when we were first starting out with Authority Zero.
Oh, yeah.
And that was our first big show, and that was our first introduction as like a band that people are going to know, and we had a ton of new merch.
Wait, when was this?
2 years ago.
Okay, so was that the one where they almost set the record for amount of booze sold?
Yep.
I was at that show. That yeah. show was unhinged, man.
We were 9 tickets away, if I remember right, 9 tickets away from being yeah. sold out.
Uh-huh.
And I believe, don't quote me on this, but the second highest alcohol sales that they've ever had.
Yeah, I was there. The energy in the room that night was outrageous because it was it System Restore opening? Because I think
System
it was them.
Restore.
All Waffle Trick.
All Waffle Trick, then us.
Then Authority Zero, yeah.
Yeah.
The craziest thing about that to me, and this also speaks to Denver being a great punk band, or punk town, at Ball Arena that night was fucking My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
And so, like, anyone, I mean, that's a slightly different audience, right? Because those tickets are going to be really expensive. And if you're going to see a show at Ball Arena, you know, maybe you remember MCR from high school or something, you're probably not going to the local show, not necessarily anyway.
Right.
But plenty of, like, dyed-in-the-wool punks are going to be at that MCR show. The fact that just a few miles away is this, like, a packed house? Because what does the Marquee hold?
450, maybe? Okay. 430, something like that?
That's a decent-sized show, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking legit. And it's 9 tickets away from being sold out? Fuck.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I remember that one, yeah.
And that's, my girls were the merch girls at that show. They made more money in tips than the band made. Because they sold so much merch. And, like, I can't even, I don't even know where, to, how much money we made that night. But it was a lot.
Yeah.
And so now, my girls think that that's just normal. Like, every show has 400 and some people at
ah.
it. And they're going to make hundreds of dollars in tips if they come out and be merch girls. If that's their gauge of what's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I go from there? You know, like
right.
as a dad, as a rock and roll dad, and we had drums in the basement, we have pianos, we have guitars, like we have a full PA to sing karaoke on, you know,
nice.
It's like, so for them, that's, what do you mean you don't have Shure wireless microphones in your basement to sing karaoke on a full PA? That's every kid
yeah,
has that, right?
Of course, right?
You know, so they don't understand that that's not every dad does that,
yeah.
you know? So they don't really, I mean, they think it's cool, right? They
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
it, but they don't listen to, you can tell when my daughter, when my kids want to manipulate me.
Okay.
Because like, you know, we always have music on in the house when we're cooking dinner or whatever, we put music on.
Yeah, us too.
And when they want to manipulate me, they'll say, we should listen to Daddy's band.
You're like, oh, here comes some bullshit.
And then they want some cake.
You
know,
yeah, right.
Like whatever's fault. There's always a something attached to that. They yeah. never listen to Daddy's band because they just simply want to sing along, you know?
Yeah. Are your kids really into Taylor Swift?
Oh, huge, dude.
Yeah, us too.
And let's be clear, we all are.
Oh, yeah, I like her too.
I'm a Swiftie all day long, dude.
Oh, dude, her stuff is exceptional.
Yeah, she's amazing.
What's your favorite Taylor Swift song?
Right now.
Or give me top three if you want.
Okay, so we just did a Taylor Swift quiz last night.
Oh, shit.
So,
okay.
Champagne Dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Is one
Champagne Dreams or Champagne Problems?
Champagne Problems.
Champagne Problems, yeah.
PBR or Champagne Dreams PBR problem. Anyway, you know what I mean?
Champagne Dreams PBR budget.
Yeah, that's right. I messed up there. Yeah, Champagne Problems is one that I absolutely love that song.
Solid one.
I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden. We literally did 50 songs last night.
Oh, shit.
Of, like, fill in the lyrics with the kids last night. And so they all kind of blend together.
Do you want me to give you my three?
Yes, please.
Okay, number one is Blank Space.
Okay.
That was the first one I ever heard that I said to my wife, we were in the car, I'm like, who is this? She goes, it's Taylor Swift, dumbass. Jesus Christ. And I'm like, oh, sorry.
How dare you?
Just because I wasn't attuned to listening to her because there was like a lot of cultural noise around her at the time. And I just sort of like wasn't really paying attention. I go, oh, no, wait, this shit is really, really good. So Taylor Swift was one. Blank Space was one. Second one I would say is You Need to Calm Down.
Yeah. That's my 7-year-old's theme song.
Like you relating to her?
We literally say that in the house.
Okay.
Like when Taylor Swift is coming on, like, should we play Emma's song?
Ah. Funny. Okay.
You need to calm down. Like, chill out. You know?
Just relax. Third one is a newish one. It's Anti-Hero.
Oh, I love that song too.
That song's amazing.
Yeah.
I wish the video was better. Like, the video's awesome, but in the middle, instead of, like, you know when she's singing about how her she'll be looking up at her kids, you know, and her daughter-in-law reads the will, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah.
And she's looking up at us and laughing. They turn that into a whole sketch with, like, Mike Birbiglia in it and a couple other people who I don't remember. And it really, like, breaks the flow of the song and the video. And
I have not seen that.
Okay.
I'll have to look that one up then.
Parts of it are really cool and really well done, but did you come up with the other two?
No, I'm dry. Sorry.
We're talking about Taylor Swift here, man. Don't even fucking...
The reality of it is, when you're a dad and you drop your kids off at school, right, mm-hmm. or a daycare or at a friend's house or whatever it is, and you put on their music to drive the 10 minutes, 20 minutes to wherever you're going, most of their music, the second they're out of the car, I immediately change it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Taylor Swift, I don't. I'll drive all the way home and realize I just listened to Taylor for the last 25 minutes.
Sure.
You know, like, it didn't even, like, occur to me to change it. Pink is the other one. My 7-year-old is infatuated with Pink. We actually went to her concert.
Oh, nice.
Down in Denver last year.
Cool.
It was amazing. That was, like, the first, like, big, you know, we go to punk shows. Like,
yeah.
The marquee with 400 some people, packed house, that's what I do. We don't go to shows with 18,000 people at Ball Arena. You know, so going to see that through my kids' eyes changed my entire view of pop music and pop culture. And,
sure.
You know, because I've been punk as fuck my whole life, you know, like, if you can't do it live, we don't do it in the studio, you know, kind of mentality. Yeah. Now we have beach balls that we want to throw out at shows, you know, and we made sunglasses because they're cool, you know, like, we have strings and stuff on our songs and cowbells and extra texture that we'll never be able to do that live. Because if you want to play at that, if you want to even remotely aim in that direction, it takes a little bit of extra.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. You know very well that I wrote a 50-song series on the website that this podcast appears on.
Insanely impressive.
Thank you. Your band appeared on the list. It's I Like Your Band Better. I love that song. That is actually my favorite of yours. I mean, I have many that I love, but that one is a number one for me. Just for whatever reason, that one just hits me. And in that series, I talked a lot about my own sort of journey, my own origin story, right? Where I was listening to a lot of grunge and stuff, and then I remember being in someone's car, and I heard, I think, Mustard Plug. And I go, what the fuck is this? Like, I need more, like, hook this up to my veins. And from there, you know, Mustard Plug led into Less Than Jake, Boss Tones, Real Big Fish. So this is like 90s third wave ska revival, Skank and Pickles, Save Ferris. And then from there, you know, I started getting into like Blink 182 and Face to Face, Bouncing Souls, all that kind of stuff. What about you? Where does it start for you? Can you pinpoint it?
100%. 100%. This is a fun full circle story too. Because so I was in ninth grade, and I was in Taekwondo. And my instructor's name was Sean. He was in high school, Sean Holdridge. He had long hair, long red hair, and a ponytail, and 6'2", 6'3", something like that. He could stand and do the splits with a high kick.
Jesus.
Like, he was the strongest dude you've ever seen. And every competition we went to, he just dominated everybody.
Limber, too, apparently.
So I wanted to be him.
Okay.
And he introduced me to a band called NOFX.
Yep.
That had the funniest song title, a record title I'd ever heard in my entire life, Punk and Drublick.
Yeah.
That just the play on words blew my mind. I couldn't tell you a single song off that record at that time.
Yeah.
I can barely tell you a song off that record right now. Other Linoleum, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Duh.
The Bruise. Yeah.
You know, but the title alone blew my mind. We were on a taekwondo trip going to some competition somewhere. Couldn't tell you where. Don't care. It was me and him, his girlfriend, and a couple other kids that were all going. And he was playing the band All.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never heard music, like even going from Descent, from NOFX.
Yeah, to All.
All was a different monster.
It's a different gear.
Yeah. The song, right? The tempo changes and how the melodies of it was just so different. And honestly, I didn't even really like it, but I wanted to know more about it.
But it was fascinating.
And so he told me this whole story about some band called The Descendants that I'd never heard of, didn't care.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't listening to The Descendants. I was listening to All. So who cares about that other band? They're not together anymore anyway, so who cares? I was listening to All now. So now I know NOFX and I know All. And he starts feeding me all this different punk rock stuff. And a year later, my best friends, to this day, are still my best friends, Chuck and Corey Hansen, moved to Ankeny, Iowa,
where
I grew up, from Minneapolis. And they were skaters, rollerbladers. And they came down with a treasure trove of punk rock. And I had never heard of Lagwagon and Face to Face and Bouncing Souls. And they knew all of those bands.
Oh, tight.
And so Chuck was 16. He could drive. He was 2 years older than us. And everywhere we went on skate tours. We went on skating days, skating events, drove all over the place. And we didn't listen to anything. If it wasn't Epitaph or Fat Wreck, it wasn't getting played.
Right, yeah.
And
I went through that phase,
too. Opened my mind to everything punk rock. But prior to that, I was a metalhead.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I had long hair halfway down my back, you know, like I wanted to shave or tattoo the sides of my head, like, you know, Philip Anselmo, you know, like, I wanted to be in Pantera.
Yeah.
You know, and that changed everything.
Did you go through a phase? I went through this one where if it's not punk, it fucking sucks.
Yep.
I hated that phase in retrospect. Like, parts of it were really valuable because, like, you discover, like, the nut of who you are, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it closed me off to so much great stuff that now I've come back and re-listened to it and I go, oh man, I missed out on this the first time. I'm not doing that again.
It took me a while to, like, I only listened to punk rock and anything older than that. I was against anything new.
Right, yeah.
100%. I was not, like, my dad listens to the blues, you know, so, like, I grew up listening to Eric Clapton and B.B. King and, you know, Muddy Waters and Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
And then my uncles introduced me to AC/DC and Metallica and Guns N' Roses.
Nice.
And then I found punk rock and I shut the hose off.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't need anything else. You said it best. Like, looking back on that, I wish that I would have kept a more open mind.
Yeah.
Especially for pop music.
Like, oh, definitely.
Now, listening to pop music, dude, I start at T-Swift and Britney Spears and I work backwards from that. You know, like, if you can get people, side story, my daughter wrote her first song. And we recorded it.
Wow.
At Black and Bloom.
Cool.
Kyle from Counterpunch and Scott from 10 Foot Pole. He mixed and made a whole track off of the piano part that she made and her singing and did this whole thing. We went into the Black and Bloom and recorded a whole track. And she hates it. She hates her voice. She hates her lyrics.
Hmm.
Like, she's horrified to share it with people.
Yeah.
But she wrote a hook. The song, right off the bat, the chorus is a massive hook. And so I had to explain to her, like, I had to write down the lyrics from Taylor Swift and go, is this good lyrics? Or is it good because of the way she sings it?
Yeah.
You know, and I was always of the thought, like, I liked Red Hot Chili Peppers, man. You know, and I still do.
I do too.
You know, and everybody makes fun of them for their gibberish lyrics. But the melody is great. The way that
I kind of don't give a shit, right? Like, you like what you like,
right?
You know, like, who gives a fuck? You know, it doesn't really matter. And it reminds me of, you brought up the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I follow this Substack that I get an email. It's called Band Name Bureau.
Okay.
And so he used to write for the AV Club, and he used to at the end of the year do the year in band names. So all sorts of shit, right? He was interviewing a comedian, and he's like, truly, are there any good band names? Like, are any of them good? When you think about it, what the fuck is Foo Fighters?
Right.
Like, what does that even mean? Red Hot Chili Peppers. You go, that doesn't mean anything outside of the context that you now put upon them because you know their music. And if you like it, you go, oh, fuck yeah, Red Hot Chili Peppers or Foo Fighters or whatever. Every band name on a certain level is stupid when you get right down to it, right? But you imprint your own meaning on it. And so...
Well, look at my band name. I mean, it's literally a made-up word, you know? It is extremely stupid. But segue from that, the AV Club, speaking of amazingly good band names... So my bass player, Brett, and I were in a cover band 10 years ago.
Yeah, eons ago, sure.
And we were in the AV Club for having one of the best band names of all time.
What was it?
David Carradine and the Auto Erotica Asphyxiators.
Jesus Christ.
And if that's not pure gold, I don't know what is.
Oh my God, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, best one of the best band names ever. And it was in the AV Club.
I'm sure I've read that because I read that all the time. Like that was one of my favorite things. That's why I pay for that dude's Substack.
Yeah.
Like the band names are always insane.
Yeah, that was still to this day one of the best band names.
Jesus Christ, man. That's a good one.
Yeah, that was fun.
For anyone who doesn't know, where does Frickishinas come from?
All right. So we stole it from Rise Against.
That's a great place to steal from.
I think so.
Because that is probably my all-time favorite band.
Mine too. So,
really?
When I started this band, when we started this band, the other three guys were already a band called Center Scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Writing like indie pop type music. And quite literally, that band is way better than this band. Like, they were so good. I still tell them you guys should probably go play some shows as that band to get more attention to our band.
When you say indie pop, like, who would be their analogs? Who would you compare them against? Or what are they like?
They were just very... drum and bass driven pop songs. Very, I can't even come up with a band that they would be compared to, but
it's hard to picture Justin's voice doing that though. You know what I mean?
Because it was still rock.
Okay. Well, yeah, but he has a real, like, I mean, we're talking Rise Against here. He's very much in that Tim McElrath kind of lane.
He's got a huge voice.
Yeah.
So him singing quieter, smaller, more reserved, you don't see that from him now.
Yeah, right? No, and you wouldn't see that coming necessarily either, because Justin's presence is very big. You know? He's got the huge hair, he's got the fucking rock star sunglasses.
Well, and he's a giant human.
Yeah, he's a big dude. I mean, he's like, he's taller than I am. He's, you know, he's got broad shoulders. Yeah, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
So
they had that other band, and COVID hit. They weren't able to play shows. No Bueno wasn't really playing anything. And so I had these couple song ideas, and so I was hanging out with those guys because they were still practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd go down and just hang out with them, and we were making music videos and just having fun. And I had a couple ideas, and I was like, hey, you guys, like, I'm going to run these ideas by you and see if you could help me finish these songs. And that's all it was. Like, it was just something to do.
Oh.
Then we wrote a couple of them. We were like, oh, those are actually kind of good. That's fun.
What songs were they?
It was You Seem Fine was the very first song we ever wrote.
Get the fuck out, really?
Yep.
Wow.
And it's fun because I had that song basically done, but I had this intro part on it, and Brett was like, nope, we're not doing that. That's dumb. And took that whole part off and then restructured it a little bit, and that song was done in like an afternoon.
And it has that, like, I call it like the Not a Surf, like real, like, spoken word, like aggressive spoken word part to it.
Yeah, right? It had like a little bridge there.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's my favorite part. And that's currently my kid's favorite part.
So you're saying that they yell it out?
Yeah. What if that doesn't work for me? What if that doesn't work for you? They lose their minds at that point.
It is a good family dynamic. Yeah, right,
totally.
There, right? Like, well, that doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me either. Screw you, bud.
What if it doesn't work for you?
So we did that.
Touche, 7-year-old.
And we even had then the other song was the song I don't like to play. Are we not doing phrasing anymore?
You don't like to play that one?
I don't know. Like, every band has the songs they like and the songs they don't like. That's become one of our more popular songs.
Yeah, I love that song.
Every time I'm just like, all right, whatever. Like, I just don't, there's something about it that doesn't strike a chord with me, but I wrote that opening riff, like, it, you know, and like the whole song was built off of that. So
you turn into a working girl and just sort of glaze over and be like, all right, do your thing. Here we go.
Just get it over with. So when we were writing all that, we used to be at Sound Structure over by the Walnut Room.
Okay, yeah.
And I had two band names that I wanted to run with. If we were going to record these, and these are all what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't even real. It was, you know, what if we did this?
Ah, more garage talk.
Yeah.
A lot of things happen for you that way.
It's kind of. Yeah. Well, especially the recent years. I was just like, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and then it does.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ask questions. I just roll with it.
Good.
You know?
It's a very zen-like approach you have.
I'm trying to, man. I'm a control freak. Massive control freak.
Ah.
So I have to let things go a little bit and let them just happen.
Good. Good for you.
Because I suck at doing that. But so we had these two ideas. The other one was I put a cover song out on a vinyl record a couple years ago as a tribute to T-Rex.
Mm.
And we did the song Deborah. It was me and Scott from Temple Pole and my buddy Kenny, rest in peace, put the record out. And we all went into the studio and did a punk version of the song Deborah.
Okay.
And if you're a T-Rex fan, that song is not punk at all. Like, it's a rambling acoustic, I don't even know what the hell it is. It's barely a song.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, sure.
So I put that out under the title Stab Party. And I had a character made of a little knife with a smiley face on it. And he's like Stabby McStabberson, you know? And
right.
Like, I had this whole character idea. And so we went to lunch, and then I had the fricasinas, which was the dumbest word I'd ever heard in my life. They said it, Rise Against said it in a documentary like 10 years ago. They were like literally interviewing the band as they were in a writing process.
Wait, and that's not in the Generation Lost documentary,
yes,
is it? It is?
Yes, it is.
I have that downstairs. Of course I do.
So there's a scene in it where mm-hmm. they're talking to Zach, and he's in front of like the subway or whatever, the M train.
Oh, no. So it wouldn't have been. This is when Chris was still in the band. Like the documentary I have.
Oh, no. You're right. No, so it's not Lost. It's
So yeah, Zach wasn't in the band yet.
I'll think of what it is.
Okay,
but
yeah.
So they're interviewing him and they're talking about their songwriting process and where they have a guitar part and they're jamming on an idea and he's like, and then Tim just starts doing his fricasinas over it, you know, and like, and that was it. They just said it one time and glossed over it and kept going. And I was like, that's the dumbest word I've ever heard in my entire life.
He starts doing his fricasinas over it?
Yeah.
Meaning what is that, like the Greeking text, like the lorem ipsum dolor?
Kind of. It's when you have a melody. So we gave it a definition.
Right.
When you have a melody before you have words when you're writing a song.
Okay.
So he's going, hey. You know, and then you fill in the words to fit that melody.
Right. Okay. I've heard Metallica do this too. Like, have you ever seen, like, when they're writing fucking Wherever I May Roam, you know, it's like, and I'll take my mind anywhere, you know, that song. But before they had lyrics, you hear James just be like, ha ha ho, hey ho.
And that's a fricasinna.
Yeah, right, okay, there. I got it.
So we gave it that definition, and we had these two band name ideas that if we were ever going to record, if we were ever going to do this. So we went over to the Walnut Room. We went to the Walnut Room every day after hanging out, and we'd have a slice of pizza and a shot of whiskey and a beer.
Yeah.
And this was like a weekly thing at this point during COVID, because you were only allowed to hang out with like three people.
Right.
So those were my people, you know? So we went over to the Walnut Room, had our shot, and we asked the bartender, if we were going to start a band, which one of these names would you like better? And we said, the Stab Party. And they went, eh. And we said, or the Fricasinas. And she goes, the Fricka what? And we're like, that's it. Like, that's the dumbest thing ever. It immediately piqued interest because it's so stupid sounding.
Well, and there's nothing like it, right? I mean, like, you can't, normal people wouldn't invent that word.
Right.
Right? So it's one of those things where you hear it, and all of a sudden your brain goes, okay, God damn it, we're going to be dealing with this for a while. And so, it, like, you hear that, and then you go, all right, well, okay, now I'm going to be thinking about you a lot.
Well, it's a blessing and a curse.
Oh, of course.
Because nobody says it right. Literally not one other person outside of our band calls us the Fricasinas.
What do you mean?
Everybody calls the Fricasinas, the Fricasinis, the Fricasinkas, the Fricasinas. It's always the Fricasinas.
Yeah.
We even put a phonetic sticker. We made a sticker with a phonetic spelling, you know, like a dictionary version with Fricasina. Mm. And people still spell it wrong or say it wrong.
Didn't fucking B-Large say it wrong on 93.3?
Yeah.
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 So I'll tell you this off mic, but I was going to write a whole sketch about it. I ended up not doing that, but that's a story for another time.
Okay.
But yeah, I remember like when you guys were on Punk Tacos and I'm like, dude, I get to record an intro for this band that I love so much. That was such a thrill, dude.
Well, and that made a huge impact for us too.
Oh, really?
You know?
Good.
Well, for you personally. And then it became like, it was fun too, because there was three or four different people did three or four different intros.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it became like a collect them all Pokemon challenge to listen to Punk Tacos to make sure you could hear
the way
every
everyone
intro,
did it. Yeah.
You know? So that was super fun. And for you personally to be the guy that, you know, like we became friends through this, you know, and for you to be the one that did the introduction for us was super cool, you know, and it meant a lot to us as a band and as friends. He's like, you know, at some point you would send a text to me. I don't remember how, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly, but you basically said something along the lines of like, our lives orbiting each other.
Oh, yeah, and being in each other's orbit.
You know, and just like, and that really meant a lot to me, you know, personally, because like, I feel like you and I are kind of kindred spirits, you know.
Very much so.
We have the same taste in music. Our lives are on the exact same path. We're in the same age range. We have the same age kids. We're doing all the same shit.
Yeah.
And we don't really get to hang out with each other that much. But when we do, there's no like awkward getting to know you again part. It's just immediately buddies being buddies.
No, it's like high value time, right? That you sub step, Jesus Christ, you sidestep some of that awkwardness, especially like, I don't know if you find this, but I find that with like male friends in particular. So like sometimes like my wife will have, you know, other couples over and like her and, you know, the other woman are friends. And then me and this other dude are like, so what are you into? And he'll say something. I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to go all that well.
Like, oh man, that hits home.
But in some cases, dude, like, so one thing I did, and we got to wrap this up, otherwise I'm going to just start off on this tangent. But what I've started doing is actually in reaching out more intentionally to other men, because like I found it can be isolating, like being a dad, because we both run our own businesses. We're both like into this scene. You actually play in it. I'm just a fan, right? And I do this show, but like it's easy to get in your own little fucking silo. And it becomes very lonely and very isolating. So I've intentionally been making more outreach to other like dudes our age, because I feel like our generation is not good at doing that.
I think men in general forever have been not good at doing that.
I agree.
Think about your dad. Can you name five of your dad's best friends that were hanging out at the house, drinking beers in the garage? I can think like two.
Yeah, I was going to say two.
You know, like
three. Yeah, three. Yeah.
Like men don't have friends.
Right.
Like it's a weird thing, you know.
It is weird.
My wife will like, we'll be out like at the park with our kids or whatever, and she's like, she never actually does it, but she'll joke like, he's wearing Vans, maybe you could be friends with that guy. He's got a band shirt on, you could be BFFs.
Thank you, sweetie. You
know? She's like trying to set me up on play dates with other dads.
Dude, there's an episode of Bluey about this.
Is there
really? That is so fucking phenomenal, about these two dads who meet at the park, and it's awkward. Like Bluey and this other little girl are just immediately like best friends, right? And it's like, can they come home for breakfast with us? And he goes, well, I don't know about that. Like, and so you can tell it's like, it's become, especially once you're married, finding new platonic male friends. The whole movie I Love You, Man is brilliant in this regard.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of my favorite movies. But that is the new dating. Like, and so for us, when I got connected with Justin again, because literally how I got alerted to Justin's existence continuing to be there was I was at that No Bueno show. I think it was your last No Bueno show that you played opening for Face to Face and Bouncing Souls.
The COVID show of 21.
Was that the last No Bueno show?
That was my last No Bueno show, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody got COVID. Like the whole venue got COVID.
Really? Let's see. Did I? I may have already had it. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Hopefully everyone survived.
Yeah, I think everyone's okay.
Okay, good. Because I was friends with Matt. And so I knew Maddie and I knew Justin from my days doing college radio up in Fort Collins, because they used to come up and play Fort Collins all the time. And I saw Justin come and I go, no fucking way. Is that Justin Duran? Like from Disarranged and Avoid. And so I just reached out to him. I'm like, hey, man, do you remember me? I'm Johnny X from the radio. And so we hit it off and then he came on the show and then we were off to the races right there. I met the rest of you guys. I go, these are my peeps.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's what I think is neat that, you know, I listened to Matt's episode, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, before you knew me?
Yeah. And then I listened to Justin's episode.
Yeah.
And then now I'm finally on, you know, connecting the dots of the two bands.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
So I thought that was super cool.
That is cool. Yeah. So anyway, all right. Let's wrap this up with plugs. Where can people find the Frickashinas? Frickashina, everyone out there. And more about 420 Punk Fest.
Yeah, so Frickashinas is on all the stuff. We have tons of videos on YouTube. We have tons of songs on Spotify and iTunes and, you know, all of the places on the internet. So if you can spell it right, Google it, and you'll find us on a ton of fun stuff.
You know
what?
You don't even have to do that. It'll be in the show notes, and so that's on iTunes. I always want to say Stitcher, but that doesn't exist anymore. Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your pods, it'll be in there, and also in the companion blog piece, johnofalltrades.us. Keep going.
So as soon as you get done listening to this podcast...
Yeah, go download some shit.
Then go download some shit. 420 Fest, we happen in a couple of weeks at East Vax Tap. We are super excited about it. It's selling really, really well. We're gonna have all the electric bands happening outside on the patio, and in between set changes, we're having acoustic bands on the inside.
Oh, well played.
So what's cool about that is each of the acoustic performers is getting a 15, maybe 20 minute set, and they're gonna play two or three sets.
Oh, cool. All right.
So they get, you know, there's only two or three performers on the inside each day versus six or eight bands on the outside each day. And though, you know, it's a mix of acoustic punk covers and, you know, Larry and his Flask, Jamin and Jesse are getting back together. Well, they're already together with Jesse and his Flood. But they're doing some actual Larry and his Flask songs, which is huge. With Todd Daigle filling in on bass for that one, which super happy to have him involved. It's a labor of love. It's the first time we've ever done anything like this. It's bigger than anything I've ever put together myself. And so far, it seems to be working, man. Good. People are excited about it. So, you normally, I hate to be that, like, the show's selling out. You better get your tickets. And then you show up on a Tuesday to see three local bands with, like, nine of their friends. Yeah. You know, it's like, you idiots. This isn't, like, you sold a ticket, let alone selling out.
And you've now fucked up the trust of your audience.
Yeah, too. You know. Yeah. So, that's not the case in this one. Like, Saturday night will be sold out. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it will be sold out before you get there. And Friday night's moving pretty quick too. So,
sweet.
And the 2-day passes are moving very fast. So, you know, get those. There's links on Facebook. There's links on Hold My Ticket. You can Google 420 Punk Fest. Hopefully John can put a link in there for us on the bio of this.
Oh, that'll be in there.
And we'll hope to see you all there, because it's going to be a massive party. Both nights, we got bands from all over the country, from California, Florida, Nebraska, you know, a bunch of Las Vegas, all of Denver bands.
Wyoming,
yeah. You know, System Restore's coming down from Casper, and they're our band brothers, you know. Yeah. We probably played with them more than any other band we've played with.
I always see you with All Waffle Trick.
So. Them too. Like, they're, Jeff, I have a funny story I'll tell you offline of how Jeff and I became BFFs.
Sweet.
So yeah, man, we are so, so, so pumped for this weekend and hope to see everybody there.
Well, Jeremiah, I will tell you, this has been an absolute pleasure to do ever since I got in your guys' orbit once again.
There you go.
Yeah, there it is. It's just been terrific. My kids love your band. I love what you guys do. I love your whole vibe, and I wish you nothing but continued success.
Thanks, man. I'm so excited to have just been here and got to hang out with you for an afternoon. I can't wait to do it again sometime.
And that'll do it for episode 364 of the John of All Trades podcast, featuring Jeremiah Ludeman of the Frickashinnas. Frickashinna, learn how to say it, and you can practice that pronunciation at the 420 Punk Fest. Get down into the show notes or the companion blog piece at johnofalltrades.us and get yourself a ticket. And you know what? While you're there, listen to some Frickashinnas tune, because you are going to immediately improve your day. I promise you that. Whether it's Friday or whether it's any other lesser day of the week, Frickashinnas will bring you some joy and rock you the fuck out. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Check out Deft on the web, DEFTCOM.US. I do all manner of public outreach. So whether you're trying to communicate more or better or more targeted, I can help you come up with a strategy to do that. Also, that includes podcasting. In addition to this show, I produce six others. So, got a podcast idea? Hit me up. The email is John, J-O-N, at deftcom.us, DEFTCOM.US. I'm on the socials, JOATpod is the handle. That's Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. Check out Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Those are probably the ones I'm on most. Episode previews are Facebook only. Those go up on Mondays. New episodes drop on Wednesdays. I'm out of here for this week. I've got another one coming up next week. We're talking about something else that I love. It's going to be fun, and it's actually a returning guest. So look forward to that. That'll be on Facebook next Monday. Until I hear you again, say goodnight, Gracie.
That's good, Johnny.